Hello and welcome to the Money Talk podcast. I'm Ed Monk. Today on the show, will China's stock market emerge as the biggest winner from the pandemic? The country's economy was first into lockdown measures, of course, but has since recorded an impressive recovery, including growth of 4.9% in the third quarter. Does it represent a further shift in the economic scales from west to east? If you enjoy the show, please rate us, share us, or leave a comment wherever you get your podcasts. When, at the start of this year, news reports began to roll in of an unknown virus in China, the rest of the world wondered how badly that country's economy would be affected. 10 months on, and the concern is reversed. The question now is how Europe and the US will recover while China goes from strength to strength. Investors there have reaped the rewards of China's relatively effective response to the illness. Will that advantage continue, and are we seeing another shift in economic power from west to east? To answer all of that, I'm joined by Tom Stevenson, investment director here at Fidelity. Tom, welcome along. Let's start, if we can, with the news from this week of really quite rapid growth in the Chinese economy. It adds to a recovery that has been gathering momentum this year, doesn't it?
Yeah, it absolutely does, Ed. So China was first into this pandemic and it appears to be first out as well. So if you go back to the first quarter of the year, GDP fell by a very substantial 6.8% in China. So that was the first time in literally decades that there had been a fall in GDP. Bounced back really quickly. In the second quarter, the April to June quarter, the GDP rose by, economic output rose by 3.2%. And then in the third quarter, it was announced on Monday of this week that activity was 4.9% higher. So that was sort of in line with expectations. The expectations were that we'd see about 5% increase in activity. So it was slightly disappointing, but pretty good.
Indeed. And let's put some more context around that, in particular to do with the stock market performance there. We often talk about, or we have spoken this year about the resilience of the US stock market, the fact that the S&P 500 has hit a couple of highs since the pandemic struck. Gains in China have been some way above even that, haven't they?
Yeah, they have the CSI 300, which is a sort of pan-Chinese index. It includes stocks traded in both Shanghai and Shenzhen. So I guess it's the closest thing that we have to the FTSE 100 or the S&P 500 as a general Chinese index. Has risen about 20% so far this year. So that's, you know, that's about twice as good as the US market, which, as we know, has been the leader in the Western world. So, yeah, the good news on the economy has not gone unnoticed by the stock market.
Indeed, and I guess maybe we're guilty a little bit of seeing, you know, the Chinese stock market as just one single entity, but actually, there's emerged this year some big discrepancies within that Chinese market, hasn't there? I mean, we'll talk about the US very often in terms of a split between, you've got very highly valued sectors, things like tech are the obvious examples of that, and then the rest of the market, maybe smaller companies where earnings have been growing less strongly. There's actually been something similar happening in China, right?
Yes, there has, and I mean there are quite a lot of technology companies in China. I mean, the world is really sort of splitting in two in terms of technology, with America on one side and China on the other. I mean, you know, obviously the best known names in technology are still, you know, from California, Silicon Valley. But, you know, there is a big Chinese presence in technology. And the valuations there are starting to reflect the same sort of enthusiasm for tech that we have seen in the US. And, you know, in fact, generally, it's sort of growth shares as a whole, of which technology is perhaps the best example. But if you look at the performance of those growth shares, It's been remarkable this year. I mean, if the market as a whole has gone up by 20% or so, those growth shares have risen by about 75%. And that compares with the performance of the sort of more out of favour value shares, things like financials, banks, you know, big, heavy petrochemicals companies, that kind of thing, which have basically moved sideways over the same period. So there's been a huge divergence in stock market performance between those two different sectors, as we've seen in other markets.
Yeah, and you wrote this week about the Chinese recovery, Tom, and one of the points you made was that the pandemic could be accelerating the development of China as an investment market, in particular in the way that it is potentially becoming less dependent on growth in the West. What did you mean by that?
Yes, I mean, I think if you look back in years gone by, you know, the strength of China as an investment opportunity was really all about its export sector. And so that in turn was dependent on the health of the American in particular economy, but also European economies. So, the ability of those of consumers in those economies to buy Chinese goods. That is less the case now for a couple of reasons. I mean, one is that, the pandemic has kind of shifted the way that global businesses are arranging their affairs, and global supply chains are less in evidence, and we've got more of a regional approach. And this is showing up in the fact that within Asia, 60% of the trade within Asia actually happens within the region. It's not related to the rest of the world. I think, changes are happening, and China is less dependent on us than it used to be.
Yeah. So to put that another way, it used to be the case that you would need lots of demand in sort of strongly or certainly healthy Western developed markets, and that would be where the markets that China serves. That's no longer the case. Is it another way of putting this sort of Chinese domestic growth story, the growth of consumption in China, a middle class in China?
Yes, I mean, I think that the consumption story in China is important. The growth of that middle class is important. Although, interestingly, if you look, I mean, let's tie this back to the figures that we saw announced this week. Industrial production was still the principal driver of growth in China. So industrial output was up by nearly 7%, and that was more than twice the 3.3% growth that we saw in retail sales in China. Production, making stuff is still an important part of the Chinese economy and has been encouraged by the government. But just looking at those retail sales figures, they compare with 0.5% growth in August. And before that, we had 7 months on the trot of declining retail sales in China. So we are clearly seeing a sharp uptick in activity on the consumption side of the economy in China. And this is, evidence, I think, that China is just pulling out of this pandemic, much more quickly than the rest of the world. It's managed to contain the virus in a way that we haven't here. They didn't really have a significant second wave in the way that we're having one here in Europe. And I just think we'll come out of this pandemic, and the lead in some areas that China has managed to create will start to look a bit unassailable in some cases.
Yeah. And just finally, Tom, before we move on from the sort of market side of this, I mean, has there been a currency effect here? I mean, the dollar has been weaker through this year. That's tended to mean people have been willing to look to more emerging markets. Has that been a factor?
Well, the Chinese currency has appreciated against the dollar by about 4%. At the margin, that probably is unhelpful for the Chinese economy to the extent that it is still dependent on exports. It makes its exports a bit more expensive. But on the other hand, it also The flip side of that is, of course, is that Chinese consumers themselves have more spending power. So, you know, it probably comes out in the wash, actually.
Yeah, OK. Let's talk then about how ordinary investors here in the UK should approach China, Tom. We know, I think, that relations between China and the West have been tested in the past few years. We've spoken a lot about the trade disputes. You know, a few years ago, it was very much, you'd hear, you know, politicians in this country very much talking about, you know, how we can partner with China and how that's going to be very much part of the more globalized world, the global race that we've become used to hearing about. Is that case still intact? What can investors and should investors be allocating towards China now, given the fact that there are it's still a volatile market and there are risks attached to it?
Well, a few questions there. I mean, I think, you know, the first point about economic relations between China and the West, clearly there has been a very significant deterioration in that relationship. You know, we've had in this country, we've had, you know, a lot of controversy around the 5G and Huawei, whether we should be trading with China, whether we should be giving over, you know, access to our economy in the way that we have. And that's been encouraged to an extent. That skepticism has been encouraged by the US, which clearly is engaged in an ongoing trade war with China. And I, you know, is that going to resolve itself? I think possibly not in the short term, because if you look at what's going on in the US with the upcoming presidential election, there aren't many things which Joe Biden and Donald Trump really agree on, but I think there is bipartisan agreement on the attitude towards China and the requirement to tame the economic power of China. So I can't see, whoever wins the election, I can't see things really improving too quickly with China on the trade front. Now, the second part of your question about investors and allocation to China, this is a difficult one, because I think if you look into the future, the Chinese impact on the global economy is only going to get more important. It's going to get bigger. And in the same way that we say, you know, that any diversified portfolio should really have exposure to the US, it accounts for 50% of the capitalization of global markets, why would you not have a decent exposure to the US? I think as we look 5, 10, 15 years into the future, you're going to start saying the same things about China. You're going to need to have that exposure. The Chinese markets are opening up to the West. It's becoming easier to invest in China. You know, I think at the moment, I don't, you know, particularly want to put figures on it, but, you know, if it's, you know, 5 or 10% at the moment, then it might be 15 or 20% in a few years' time, exposure to China and the wider Asian region.
Yeah, and I guess it's the case that, as you know, that allocation probably will grow and will be justified in growing simply because of the size of the Chinese market. But it may slightly be discounted because of factors like the volatility of it, because of certain liquidity factors, but a certain lack of visibility in some parts of the Chinese market. That always is likely to be to count against the allocation, isn't it? It's always it has sort of one foot in the developed market camp and one foot in the emerging market camp.
Yes, I think that situation is evolving over time. I mean, if you went back 10 years ago, you'd have probably been, you know, even more skeptical about the due diligence required in China and the sort of the transparency of the markets, etc. It's obviously changed now, and I think in 5-10 years' time it will look very, very different again. But you're absolutely right, you know, there are differences between the Chinese market and Western markets. I mean, the Chinese market is still quite heavily influenced by retail, ordinary individual investors in a way that the Western markets are a bit more institutional in nature. And that makes the Chinese market a bit more volatile. You know, when there's an enthusiasm for investing in shares, you know, prices do tend to shoot up. We saw that in 2015. We're beginning to see it this year again. So yeah, that volatility maybe does count against a bigger allocation to China. But you know, in the long run, the economic clout of China within the global economy is undeniable.
Okay. Well, Tom, that is all that we have time for. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Ed.
You've been listening to the Money Talk podcast. Check fidelity.co.uk for daily written updates and articles on these and other topics from across Fidelity in the UK. And subscribe via iTunes to get the podcast downloaded direct to your devices every week. Please be aware that the value of investments and the income you get from them can go down as well as up, so you may not get back what you invest. This information doesn't constitute investment advice and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision, nor should it be treated as a recommendation for any investment. Eligibility to invest in an ISA or a pension and the value of tax savings depends on personal circumstances, and all tax rules may change. You will not normally be able to access money held in a pension until the age of 55. Reference to specific securities or funds should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell these securities or funds, and is included for the purpose of illustration only. Fidelity Personal Investing does not give personal recommendations. If you're unsure about the suitability of an investment, you should speak to an authorised financial advisor.